We have a great panel this afternoon, Arts as a Tool for Civic Engagement and Community Building, followed by a musical performance with Hindus for Zoran. After that, Councilmember Shekhar Krishnan is going to be here at 4:45 to close us out for the day. So we hope you'll stay for that. So today's panel is moderated by Commissioner Diya Vij, and I'll just introduce her, and she'll introduce the rest of the panel. So Commissioner Diya Vij was appointed as Commissioner of the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs by Mayor Zoran Kwame Mamdani in February 2026. In this role, she oversees cultural funding for more than 1,000 nonprofit arts and cultural organizations across the five boroughs and directs cultural policy for the City of New York. Previously, Commissioner Vij served as Vice President of Curatorial and Arts Programs at Powerhouse Arts in Brooklyn, where she was brought on to increase access to affordable art-making facilities to New York City artists, expand educational efforts, and launch a contemporary arts program that centers the process of making art and the ecosystem of labor that surrounds the process. Over the past decade, she has held programming, curatorial, and communications positions at major New York City institutions. She served as the curator at Creative Time, where she commissioned and stewarded large-scale public artwork, launched the public programming space CTHQ, relaunched the Creative Time Summit, and initiated the R&D Fellowship for Socially Engaged Artists. As the Associate Curator of Public Programs at the Highline, she organized dozens of live events, community programs, and performances with artists working across disciplines. Commissioner Vij also previously worked at the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs from 2014 to 2018, during which time she launched and co-directed the Public Artists in Residence Program. Additionally, she helped lead the agency's citywide diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative and played an active role in public monument efforts, as well as Create NYC, New York City's first strategic long-term plan for culture. She was a curatorial fellow and the communications manager at the Queens Museum from 2010 to 2014 during the opening of the museum's major capital renovation. She also previously served on the boards of directors of the Laundromat Project, A Blade of Grass 2022-2026, and the Poetry Project. So please welcome Commissioner Vij. Thank you so much.
I'm so delighted to be here today. It's always a pleasure to get to be in community with all my fellow diaspora art folks. It's really also like near and dear to my heart to talk about art and organizing together. I think it's such a special place. And if anything is true about New York City, I think it's like there's no way to tell the history of our city without telling the history of arts that's so intertwined with our social justice and political movements that have gotten us to this point. And I am a firm believer that that kind of intersection of art and politics is what drives change. It's also almost impossible to separate politics from art. And so I'm really excited to have this conversation now. And I'm going to let you all introduce yourselves. I think you'll do a much better job than me. But maybe by way of introduction, can you also answer the question of at what point did you realize in your practice that art and organizing were linked together? How did you get there?
Hello, my name is Armana Khan. I'm a DJ, and the moment that hit me when I wasn't able to separate the messages that I wanted to give out to the world and the art that I wanted to put out was when I was a couple months into DJing, and I realized that I became the girl that I was looking for when I was in high school on the internet, searching for somebody that would show me some sort of freedom outside of these constructs and these boxes that we're all forced to be put in. I'm a brown kid from Connecticut, and I was told in my life that I had to do something in medical field or something in school. So I went into nursing, and I thought that that was my life until like I chose to just be true to myself. I've always been a lover of music and a collector of music, and I decided to do that with my life. And at a certain point, I was looking out into the crowds at my shows, and I saw so many people that looked just like me, brown kids that were wearing churiyan, bangles, and lehengas, and acting like bad, quote unquote. And I was like, I think I have a duty now to show these people that you don't have to believe them when they're telling you that you're going to be unhappy if you choose art, and creativity as your life because there's so much happiness with it. And so I realized that when I became the girl that I was looking for in my past life.
I recommend
you not.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sneha. And thank you for this panel. And thanks to everyone for being here as well. So what brought me into music, or what saw the connection between arts and politics? I think it actually started with the racism that my parents faced in post 9/11 Connecticut. All three of us are from Connecticut, funny enough. And I remember clearly, and a lot of people don't know what happened this morning, actually. There was a South Asian boy who was stopping every South Asian woman and telling them that they think Islam is bad. And it was just clear Islamophobia. And it just made me feel this emotion of why we're here today. There is raging Islamophobia in the Northeast, I mean, in America, around the world. And Islam is a religion of peace. And this is why plurality is so important, not only to understand that there's many religions, but also to accept every religion, to understand that there's God in every religion. And understand there's truth in every religion. So I make that distinction from being secular. I'm very pro using the word plurality because it's more of a acceptance of every religion rather than saying that multiple religions exist. My parents faced racism. I'm sure a lot of people in this room can relate. I remember being in the back of my car and my dad was driving my sister and I, and a police stopped us. And he pulled us over, and he asked my dad to drop the windows down in the back seat. And he actually asked my sister and I, "Do you know this man? Is he kidnapping you?" Now, my dad is Indian. He looks just like me. He looks just like my sister. So there's no confusion that he's my dad. But it's post 9/11. Everyone, the police are assuming that every brown man is a terrorist. And even still to this day, you know, we told the two police people here about the Islamophobic South Asian man outside. The brown police officer took us seriously. The white man did not take us seriously. The white police officer did not take us seriously. We had to tell them consistently that this is a hate crime. To say Islam is bad, this is a hate crime. You didn't think it's a hate crime. So it's still happening, you know, to this day, and it's so relevant. Anyways, back to music. So, after very much all the racism that everyone, you know, faces, the brown people face, my parents start their days with a bhajan every morning and a bhajan every evening. And that brings them so much inner peace, the most inner peace that I love seeing them feel. And you can just tell that it's part of their daily ritual because it's a cultural part for them. It brings them back to Kerala. It brings them back to God. It brings them back to healing more so, especially in this world where anything can happen, right? So I see politics and music as very much interconnected because I went more deeper into the music, especially that my family listens to, and the framework of music of raga and how certain sounds are set up in ways for thousands of years to heal our minds, to heal our bodies, to heal our brains. So the science of raga is also something that got me really interested in music, and it also is very cross borders. Many people here know Mehdi Hasan, a popular Pakistani singer. He uses raga throughout his ghazals, and he understood that ragas was a way to invoke a deep emotional invocation of feelings of happiness and joy, but also sorrow and compassion. I'm rambling. Okay. Anyways, yeah, music and politics so deeply interconnected.
Thank you, Sneha. I'm Al. My original name is Ala, but it's hard to pronounce, so I go by Al. I'm originally from Bahrain, and I do rap. I produce, write, and perform my own rap songs. And I'm also a vocalist with the Palestine Youth Choir here in the city. If you've heard of them, you should look them up. We do fun, really good performances. Catch our next performance if you can. For me, art and politics have been inseparable since my introduction to music culture. Growing up, I didn't listen to music, and that's because in my where I grew up, around late 2000s, early 2010s, the music at that time, I didn't really like it. I mean, I like it now, but at the time I didn't like it. And I thought, like, honestly, some of it felt like they were trying to brainwash people into, like, behaving and thinking about life in a, like, very degenerate way, in my opinion. Like, music at that time, at least the ones I was exposed to, like, mainstream music. So I didn't really, like, I wasn't into music when I was growing up. But then I got exposed to some, like, rap artists who mixed their music and rap with political messaging. Their names are Loki and Immortal Technique. Immortal Technique is from here in Harlem. Loki is this Arate British rapper. So I was exposed to people who mixed their politics with their music, and I found rap to be like an avenue, like a very effective avenue to do that. That's kind of like, that was my exposure to music, basically. And then I listened to a song called They Don't Really Care About Us by Michael Jackson. So I was like, wait, this music, like, it doesn't have to be just rap. It can also be good music. And then I was exposed to Kanye West in college. I mean, he's problematic now, but when he first started making music, like, it was fire. Like, he knew how to make, like, amazing beats and speak about, like, interesting things. So I was inspired to, like, do the same. So I started, like, making my own beats and writing stuff over them. And the piece I'm performing today is, like, the first one I did when I was in college with a spoken word. I joined a spoken word organization. I don't want to go for too long, but just say this. It was an interesting experience because I was this, like, random international student, Arab international student who joined this organization. And it was predominantly, like, a black space. And it was, like, specifically black people from Chicago. So it was very, like, I was, like, out of place. But I ended up writing something really good. And the group really liked it. And at the end, like, during rehearsals, they'd, like, sing the chorus with me. And it was, like, a whole vibe. And at the concert, I did really well at the concerts also with my piece, the piece that I wrote. And I got the Rookie of the Year award. So I had validation from fellow rappers and artists, so it made me feel good, and I felt like it's something that I can continue doing, so I've been doing it since. Yeah, thank you.
I'll try to be brief. I'm Zeeshan B. I'm a singer, songwriter, filmmaker, and I'll just sort of zoom through things. Like, I grew up in a household of, you know, parents that really loved music and really respected it, and if they had their way, they would have studied it in school. And so they kind of lived vicariously through me and my sisters. And they were concert going people. And so I grew up around that. My father was back in the 60s and 70s when he lived in Mumbai, back in the old country. He used to write columns about black art and literature and music. And so, my mom worked in the very black space. The I'm from Chicago, so when he mentioned that, I was like, yeah. Connecticut pizza is really good. Like, people do not give it enough credit. It is phenomenal. But I just want to be generous here. What was I saying? Oh yeah. So, like, but folks, like, you know, I grew up in that ambiance, and I went to music school. I went to a conservatory called Northwestern. It's in Chicago. I've studied classical music, Western classical music. I skipped something really important. When I was a kid growing up, I used to sing in a gospel choir. And I was the only non-black kid there, but for whatever reason, they made me the male soloist. So the stamp of approval has always been around. And that was very foundational for me, as is Mehdi Hasan. He's the soundtrack of my childhood. So, like, when you mentioned his name, I had an imaginary tear going down my eye. Growing up with those musical cultures, and then I did classical music, I sang opera, I was an opera singer, I started my career in New York, and I just was like, I felt really constrained by it. Like, I could do it, I had the ability to do it, but I couldn't inhabit those roles. Like in Don Giovanni, this Mozart opera, I had to be a Spanish nobleman, but I don't look like a Spanish nobleman, and, you know, I sure as hell don't act like one. And so it was like, but I know how to be me, you know? And so I went on a journey of leaving classical music behind and going back to the roots, which for me were R&B and music from the Indian subcontinent. After a lot of years of struggle, I caught some breaks. NPR premiered like my first album, then Rolling Stone did a review. Then the first time I was invited on the Colbert Show. I've been on there a few times, and that was really, really helpful for me in my career. And I'll just sort of talk about the moment. Like, there is a seminal moment in my career that really, I think, brings me where I am now. And that's when this was a long time ago. I think it was a decade ago. It was the 10th it was the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's march in Chicago in Marquette Park. This was where he said, this was a direct quote from him. He said, "I've marched in the Deep South. I've never seen the hatred that I've seen here in Chicago." So for the 50th anniversary of that, they were dedicating a memorial. And Reverend Jesse Jackson, who's no longer with us, rest his soul, he was presiding over the ceremony. And so there were people from all different communities, and, you know, I was selected to represent the Muslim community because I grew up in a Muslim family. I'm like the least religious person ever, but, like, for whatever reason, they're like, he knows how to sing, so let's just have him represent us. I decided to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing. I don't know if you guys, it's basically the "Lift Every Voice and Sing Till Earth and Heaven Ring, Ring with the Harmony," et cetera, et cetera. That's basically the Black National Anthem. And so I decided to sing that, and I sang it, and, like, I'll just never forget Reverend Jesse Jackson, like, because he was standing on the other side of the stage, and my band and I were in back, and he just, like, did, like, one of these turnarounds, and, like, just the whole time was just, like, you know, he, after it was over, like, you know, everybody went nuts, and he gave me, like, a black power fist, and then this is the moment I'll get. So it's, like, afterwards, you know, we're milling around backstage. Reverend Jesse Jackson makes a beeline to me, and, you know, just gives me this really hearty hug, and there's a "Boy, you sang that so pretty. You sang that so pretty. I wish Martin was here. He would have liked it." And for that moment, you know, time froze for me. I was like, "Martin, who's he talking about?" Like, "Oh, that Martin." Like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's his homeboy. Like, we don't know Dr. King as Martin. We know him as MLK, Dr. King, this, that. And so when he said that to me, like, I just, like, you know, this is his ride or die. He's calling him Martin. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, to have that blessing from him meant so much. And it made me realize that, like, I think up until that point, I always just sang whatever I felt was right. And but after that, I realized that, like, basically, history is not like an abstract history anymore. This is like an actual, this is not a textbook. I'm literally standing in front of somebody who was there. And So for me, that really galvanized me to make, you know, my art and my politics a sort of infrangible bond and inseparable. Yeah.
I love, there's so much to learn from each one of you. This, we could have like a whole day together, but we have a very short amount of time before the performance that we're all excited for. So maybe let's just like do a rapid fire few rounds. Like really, let's just like popcorn some words out and some like feelings. So what do you think, what can art do that traditional organizing can't? Just like three words. Anyone go.
Deep emotions, like tear emotions easily.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It taps into the emotions and not the logic, and people react and are receptive more to emotion and feelings than logic most of the time. So,
you know, the way I see it, traditional organizing often speaks in the language of urgency, whereas art speaks in the language of recognition.
Can you use this?
Oh, yeah. Sound is creation. I think about that and how I could change through art.
We're able to show messages and deeper level of thinking and ideas from mundane everyday things that sometimes people that are living in like a 9-to-5 world aren't able to fully understand. Like we're able to express things that we see on a day-to-day basis with emotion through our art without it being like the actual message, if that makes sense.
And Sneha, you touched on this about the story you shared from this morning, but within diaspora communities, there are such a wide range of worldviews, right? And part of our work is kind of undoing or confronting what might exist within our own. So I guess another kind of rapid fire is like, what is the possibility to do that? And like, have you experienced that from your perspective as musicians?
Stick the question and then, sir.
That you are like so much of what we have to do is confront difference, right? How does art help us organize across difference? How do we get to undo through what we're doing?
So I'm part of Hindus for Zoran. I started the Instagram page a couple last year, and one thing that we did last year was we would organize with different affiliations. So we worked with Pakistanis for Zoran, Bangladeshis for Zoran, Afghans for Zoran, Iranians for Zoran, Arabs for Zoran. The list kind of goes on and on, but we worked with over 20 affiliation groups. And we would host event spaces, and we would have over like 600 people at each of these events. And it was a really beautiful because it was music that brought us all together, right? So we would all have some musician coming, and in the end of the day, we all just want free buses. We all have socialistic policies, and we came together as cultures, but also cultures that care for each other, and cultures that care for families, and cultures that care to provide love through policy. So that was one way that we used
or you can use that language.
Yeah, I can add something. The Arab community is a very diverse like community. You can have like such varying like dialects and cultures within like a very small geographic area. So in my involvement with the Palestine Youth Choir, you see a lot of people who are from different Arab countries, and through our like commitment to like spreading revolutionary hope through cultural products of the Palestinian struggle, we end up learning about each other and like what we think about, and we kind of like it's more easier to discuss these kind of things in that environment when we're both committed to the same thing than it would otherwise.
I think that like we're talking about trust and like, you know, having difficult conversations. I think that trust begins when people recognize that they have a shared emotional inheritance before even a political affiliation with one another, and before they intellectually agree with one another. I think art, by its very nature, brings out our shared emotional inheritance, and it allows people to encounter complexity without immediately forcing, you know, resolution. And like, we're all very contradictory people. A song can hold contradiction better than a debate can. I mean, I like I said, I grew up in a Muslim family technically, but my dad's name is Raj, like, and you know, my grandparents, they had murtis, like the Hindu, like Shivji and Ganpati in their house. And I come from a Vedic culture, so I grew up, I sang bhajans too. And so for Hindus for Zohran, when they asked me to come and like perform for that, I just was so honored that they didn't think, oh, he's technically not Hindu. I mean, that's very complicated stuff, but it's just, to me, it's like, but it's part of like my inheritance and I make no bones about it. So singing a bhajan for that, and seeing how the complexities of the Indian subcontinent were, I guess, laid to rest. And I don't know if that answers the question, but.
And being backing off of what you said earlier, I think that I combat that difference by really focusing on how music is a universal language, and it doesn't matter what culture you come from, what religion you come from. Like you were saying, Islam, like we have Qawwali, like every there's music in every religion, every culture. Before we had recorded music, we were taking stones and we were hitting it against a wall to make a beat. And it shows that everybody knows a good song, whether you understand the language or you understand like what's happening in the song, everybody knows that amazing song. And I really think that us as South Asian people, sometimes we're not the most accepting of races outside of brown people. And back in the day, we were in this scheme of music where a lot of rap and hip hop was mixing with Bollywood and Desi music, Punjabi music. I mean, think about like Beware of the Boys, Munya Do Bach Ke Rahi with Jay-Z and Punjabi MC. That was a mixture of black and brown music in such a beautiful way. And then 9/11 happened and we kind of got torn apart. And a big thing that I try to do with my sets and my music is to bring black and brown communities together. I'll try to take, you know, dancehall music or Afrobeats or Amapiano, and I'll mix it with Punjabi music, old school Bollywood, because I really think that although the world wants to take us as minorities and rip us apart and make sure that we stay away from each other, race, age, gender, whatever it is, music is that glue that can really bring us all together, regardless of the language, what you come from, because again, we can all come together with good music because it's something that's so inherently in us and has been in us and every single human being.
That's an amazing place to end, but I want to ask you all to go really quickly and tell us all what you're working on now. Give us one thing that we could follow along.
Speaking of like bringing people together through music, I have a party called Khanistan. My last name is Khan, and so I made a fake country, Khanistan, because I like to take everybody on a musical journey together. So, because I play music all around the world, so at my party we go on this musical journey together, and yeah, it's a really amazing time. And I'm throwing a Khanistan on June 26th at Brooklyn Monarch, and then we're also going to London and around the U.S. So I'm really excited about that. So if you see my name on a flyer, you know, it's going to be good music.
Nice. And also, she has an event tonight at Lilith. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So come through tonight. Are you going to be there? Oh, it's going to be there. Oh, okay, nice. Look at that. I found this civil rights law firm. It's a legal co-op. And a lot of attorneys are joining because it's a worker-owner co-op. And we redistribute the funds to musicians and artists. So far we've been doing that through contingency fees that we've been funding ourselves with, and that's been going. So if you want to support our work and fight against employment discrimination and housing discrimination, we actually just got another, I don't think he's here today, but we did employ someone today from here, which is awesome. He's not here right now.
I have a performance with the choir on Sunday, which is Palestine Day. So in New Jersey, they have like the biggest Palestine Day events in the U.S. There's like 20,000 people are going to be there throughout the entire day. So it's going to be interesting to like perform in front of all these people outdoors. And on June 6th, I'm performing with some musicians in my choir. We formed a band, and we're going to perform some songs from this artist called Muhammad Munir. So I'll be like on the synth.
I'm actually developing a different concert format. I've gotten tired of just like taking my band to a club or like a concert hall and just playing a standalone show. I'm interested in doing something that, because I've been writing films and I've also been putting out some short films, I'm developing a format in which there's a, my band and I, we play like an overture, kind of like an opera, like, you know, where it's like that's connected to the film, and then the film plays, and then the band comes up and we all have a good time after the film. That's like a concert format. I'm developing, most likely will be premiering it at Drom, which is in Alphabet City. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you.